Hello, everyone, and welcome to what is now officially going to be the final Rebel Room post-game edition of the 2008-2009 season.
Although, you know what? We can do some in the off-season here and there when it's special. Yeah, right. But we want people to know that in the off-season, periodically, we'll be doing some things and keeping people in touch with recruiting and summer stuff. And, yeah, we'll be around.
That deep, sexy voice belongs to Rob Misch.
Doobie-doobie-doo.
I'm Ryan Green. We are here in Lexington, Kentucky, where UNLV's season ended. The Rebels finished 21-11, and they lose to the Kentucky Wildcats 70-60 despite a spirited effort in the second half to cut a 20-point deficit to 3, which had the 8,327 in Memorial Coliseum, not Rupp Arena, on edge for a little bit. And Rob, let's
what was the green t-shirt we saw earlier today strolling around Lexington?
Lucky in Kentucky.
The Rebels were not lucky in Kentucky, but they made
it
a run.
They had luck for a little while.
Yeah, they made it a run.
And let's start off by talking about this game was in Memorial Coliseum, not Rupp Arena. This was a day, Rob, it was a long day, but a day we got kind of drenched in hoops history.
It was a pretty special day.
Pretty neat.
Yeah, it was a really special day and capped off by a pretty exciting game. It didn't look like it was going to be, but then the Rebels kind of woke up and kind of made it exciting at the end. So I know Kentucky probably wanted a 30 or 40-point blowout, but, that was a good capper to our day as far as having an exciting game because we were treated to a couple tours of Memorial Coliseum and Rupp Arena.
After a little bit of sweet talk.
Took a little bit of sweet talk and won Christine Killamire to flash her pearly whites. But yeah, we got in both barns and it was pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool to get in there and look around, see the banners, the history, hear some old tales from the security guards at both places. And I think the most entertaining thing we heard was from our new friend Beryl Cooper, who led us into Memorial Coliseum, told us about the history, all that stuff, and kind of as we were walking around taking the pictures, he goes, "Oh, and you see those NIT things all over? Those aren't usually there."
Two big NIT championship banners. There was after one baseline wall, big wall hanging were the big blue banners, championship banners, the seven from the NCAA title seasons, and then of course on the wings were one from each of the NIT championship years, and that's what he was referring to, those two NIT banners. They're not usually there, but being an NIT event, it kind of dusted them off.
Talking about the decals all over the place, and they're not used to NITs in Lexington, Kentucky.
No, they definitely are not. Just for a little background, I'm sure anybody listening to this knows what we're doing, what happened, why it was there, but tonight's first-round NIT game between UNLV and Kentucky was not in Rupp Arena, the usual home of Kentucky, because they have the state high school playoffs.
Yeah, which they were setting up for.
Starting tomorrow, today, mm-hmm. Wednesday. And so they switched this NIT game, to Memorial Coliseum. They hadn't played a game there since 1976, the Kentucky men. So, like we said, it holds less than 9,000, but man, it was raucous.
It really was, and that was part of what helped Kentucky overcome, a 9-2 start by the Rebels, which maybe had some people on edge early. Kentucky storms back, goes up 12 at the half.
Big jam
right before it, right at the buzzer. Patrick Patterson, the 6'8". Mammoth of a power forward for the Kentucky Wildcats, follows off a Darius Miller miss with a two-handed stuff right before the buzzer. The place just went absolutely bonkers as they were leaving the floor. Kentucky's up 12.
Let's talk more about that guy. What a fantastic player.
Yeah,
that was,
he really was.
That was his 15th double-double. He had 16 points, 11 boards, and sitting where we were sitting in the first half, he was strong, he was determined, and you know what? He was classy and professional, too. Not a lot of showboating, a lot of look at me, and wherever he goes in the pro ranks, they're going to be happy to have him.
Yeah, and UNLV, they kept him from scoring down low early with a lot of help defense. On the very first possession of the game, he gets the ball on the right block. Joe Darger puts a forearm in his back. Rene Rougeau flashes over. Patterson was kind of caught off guard. They wind up turning the ball over. But his points came in a variety of ways. Hit a couple free throws, had a couple mid-range jumpers in the second half, which helped key that that the Wildcats to a 20-point lead. Also had another jam that capped that. But yeah, guy who did it in a variety of ways for them and was huge defensively, especially flashing out to the perimeter, getting his hands in shooters' faces.
Oh my God, he was fantastic. Versatile. You can do so many things with him. Lon Kruger told us after the game that UNLV got into a little bit of trouble, which caused that 20-point hole, because you kind of got to pick your poison, obviously, between Patterson and Jody Meeks. You know, you want to double, you want to switch, you want to hound both of them. Well, you don't have the numbers to really do that, and something's got to give at some point, and it did give in a pretty big way. But you know what? We'll talk more about this, but there was a lot of character, the Rebels said, on their comeback, and we can allude to more to that later.
Well, let's kind of build up towards that. UNLV goes into the half down 12, as we were talking about, and boy, just a first half where there were a lot of missed opportunities, essentially, to build off that 9-2 start, because you look at the way UNLV shot the ball in the first half. They were 10 of 30 from the floor, 3 of 17 from long range, 1 of 6 from the free throw line. And, you know, even the Kentucky media sitting in the row behind us were like, boy, these guys just can't shoot. And that's, you know, this is a team with a lot of shooters on it that, you know, I mean, hey, same old story, you know, struggling in spurts, or in stretches, excuse me.
The gang that couldn't shoot straight. Will that be the epitaph for this team this season? I think it might be, because as we've talked about, this has become so redundant. You know, this isn't the first time we've seen that. We've seen this ridiculously frequently for the last 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's how the team finished the season. And you know what, Ryan? It continued in the second half when they had it down to 3. There was opportunity to turn it into more, but nah, they just were their own worst enemy. You know, there was a couple pretty poor plays, consecutive possessions by Oscar Belfield with turnovers, but one in particular was particularly grating to Lon Kruger, right in front of him. Oscar's dribbling to his right, and it appeared, I didn't really have a good view of it, but it appeared that he fell, he tripped, whatever happened, turnover, Kentucky ball, and it just made Lon Kruger livid. And he basically said afterward, hey, if Oscar gets tripped, that's a foul. That's a very simple, easy call. Oscar told me that the ref told him he didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very critical juncture in the game. And, you know, then again, when you go for the last 4 minutes of game with only a three-pointer by Rene Rougeau with 16 seconds left, that's... that's a lot of mistakes. So to hone in on one may or may not be fair, but it was a tough ending to a tough season.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, that I think a lot of Lon Kruger's frustration, too, may have come from just calls that the Rebels didn't get for much of the night. A couple that stood out, you know, maybe a borderline blocking foul called on Joe Darger for the highlight dunk that Perry Stevenson had in the second half, where on the replay that they showed in the arena 3 times, his feet were set. You know, even right before... Belfield didn't get that call. Kentucky bringing the ball up calls a timeout in the backcourt with the shot clock at 22 seconds, meaning it was a backcourt violation. It was not called, and it's sitting up there. And then Kentucky inbounded the ball in the backcourt, didn't get it across till 19 seconds, still no call. There were a lot of...
That's not the first time we've seen that this season either. You know, that is just a weird deal. And to all you Kentucky fans, no, we're not apologizing for anything. But when you look at a game, things tilt a certain way. And from the get-go, the moment it was announced that UNLV has to go to Kentucky, this game was tilting a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So... I would love anybody to explain to me why Kentucky, losing 9 of its previous 13 games, got to host a postseason game. There you go.
As I draw my finger from nipple to nipple, the name across the front of the jersey, it carried a lot of weight with the selection committee. And
who's the chair of the NIT selection committee? Oh, the esteemed C.M. Newton. And I know he's esteemed, and I know he's accomplished a lot in his career. But the chairman of the NIT selection committee, if you think that committee isn't maybe helping him out and his former school a bit by allowing them to host a first-round game and add a couple dollars to their coffers, you are sadly mistaken. That's my point.
Well, before we elaborate too much on that, because we've already caused a lot of us quite a stir with that, Let's talk about that second half run some that UNLV went on. Billy Gillespie talked about it in his postgame presser, saying, you know, you guys have seen it before. That's this team's immaturity, that, you know, they get up big and they kind of relax a little bit. And they certainly relaxed quite a bit as UNLV was just getting repeated open looks from deep. And, I mean, but the same, it was like you mentioned, the empty possessions afterwards. And the first thing that came to my mind was that game a few weeks ago at Utah where they closed back to within two. Or four, a 3-on-1 break goes uncapitalized on. They miss a couple open shots, have a turnover, and just like that, the deficit's back up to 10, and it's pretty deflating for these guys.
This was a Sisyphus
word I don't know.
Sisyphusian effort by the Rebels this season. Mm-hmm. That's the guy who was relegated to a certain part of hell where he pushes a boulder up a hill only to have it constantly fall down, and he's constantly for eternity pushing it uphill. We saw Rougeau miss another close bucket inside tonight. Just the same repeated things. That
Wink
was
on
just,
the 2-on-1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We also saw Jody Meeks slice down the lane, dribble it out of bounds, and somehow the ref comes up with a phantom reach. That's just one of a few things that kind of was curious about this game. But guess what? A loss is a loss.
Mm-hmm. And UNLV heads into the offseason now, 21-11, and really never got, any closure on those problems that they were having in the middle of the season either. You know, Joe Darger hit on it after the game. He said, you know, the same thing, you know, getting close and just not getting over the hump, things like that. And, you know, I asked him what he'd learned from this season, and he talked about valuing each possession, obviously, and he also said the importance of free throws, because he said, look back on the close games we had and how many free throws we missed. The man makes a point.
And we've been harping on it, you know, regularly, time mm-hmm. and again. So, yeah, that stuff will always come back to haunt you. The comeback was... Oscar Belfield said them coming back and showing that character, cutting a 20-point deficit to 3, is something that he hopes that the young guys carry over to next season, the importance of each possession, the importance of preparing well, and executing game plans. Oscar was very straightforward afterward in saying that's got to carry through, and he is one who's going to try to make that happen. When they were making that run, Mo Rutledge hit a couple three-pointers that were key in starting that. And he just said, boy, you know, that could have been a 30 or 40-point loss if not for that comeback and for them showing that character. So, I don't know if that's commendable or what it is, but, they were proud. And so at this point, for them to show pride in any little thing, I think is a benefit to them.
Especially after... Rene Rougeau kind of called him out for not showing any pride.
Yep.
Not even a week ago against San Diego State. So what do we want to talk about as we get here to the end? Do we want to look ahead? Do we want to...
It was a tough end of his first season as a Rebel for Trayvon Willis. He in his last seven games, he went 4 for 24 from the three-point line. Tonight he was 0 for 5. At the line or at the three-point line. Only 1 of 7 from the field, and the only basket was a nice two-handed dunk on the right side that I think some of his peers over at UNLV didn't think he was capable of. But we've been seeing him dunk in practice time and time again.
To our memory, his first dunk in a game as a Rebel.
It seems like it was. We saw him throwing down some flashy dunks before the Colorado State game, maybe too flashy. But he's a powerful player, and he's a smart kid, and he's strong. I think he's gone through more injury-wise than we even know this season. We can start with his right shoulder. He's got the old a football injury from his sophomore year in high school, slightly separated shoulder. It was during practice, and he was running out of bounds, and he was far out of bounds. And some teammate comes up to him, blindside him, grabs his shoulder, slams him into the ground, and the shoulder hits the ground. Mm-hmm. So slightly separated. He's been feeling it ever since. He's had two cortisone shots. We've documented that very well this season. And I think that pain is more than he would ever let on.
And his roommate Derek Jasper alluded to it a little bit on the phone yesterday.
You talked to him yesterday. What did Derek say about that?
Well, he talked about that. He talked about the knee bothering him. And, yeah, I think Trevon really just hasn't had time to heal up. And, boy, does he need it.
He's got a lot of pride, too. You can you can see that every day in practice. He's going to be a leader on this team. And I think he learned a lot about leading this season. As much as he's hurting, he stings the most when he loses. So, you know, maybe he will learn to talk after a loss, but maybe he won't. And heck, that's not a bad thing. A guy can do what he wants about a loss and not talk, and that's his prerogative. But Trey, after wins, please talk after wins.
There you go. Even if you look bad in the process.
Yeah.
Anything else on your mind? About your glorious trip to Lexington.
No, I just you know, Trey really had a tough end of his season. You know, he had only 4 points tonight, and it was his lowest output since 11 games ago when he had 2 at Air Force. So it's really a sour book note on his season, and hopefully he doesn't get too down on it, because there's a lot to learn. There's a lot of great players coming in next year. You know, if they can gel, they can maybe be quite a dynamic team. He had a rough start to this season too, which theoretically started in June in Australia. Yeah, the Rebels went 4-2 on that tour, but he had one or two games at the very end where there was some poor decisions, some game deciding sways that didn't go his way, and so he really hit the video sessions. And he's really been a student of trying to get better. And hopefully this isn't too sour of an ending where he just continues to learn and get better. Beautiful Kentucky. You know what? That was really a classy crowd, you know?
Yeah.
So many of those. There was a lot of students and on their feet a lot of the time. It was deafening. I got a great story after the game. There was a young guy who works for the university, was sort of standing near the UNLV locker room. I think he works in the sports information department, but I'm not sure. Youngish guy. And he wasn't teary-eyed, but almost. He wasn't choked up, but almost. Because he had heard from his grandfather stories about games that were played in Memorial Coliseum. This is an arena that was open in 1950, and then they played there until 1976 when they moved to Rupp Arena. This guy had heard about stories about the raucous atmosphere, about the loud crowd, the atmosphere, the environment, and you could almost see him get goosebumps from it. And then he ended the story by telling me, well, now I have my story for my grandkids, and it was this game. This was really a special deal, and it was really neat to be a part of and watch.
It's a bigger deal than maybe some people realize at the moment, because who knows when the next time Kentucky men are going to play a game.
Absolutely. So it was fun being a part of it.
Yeah, definitely was. Well, final comments before we board in the morning to head back to fabulous Las Vegas.
Turn out the lights. The party's over. Dandy Don Meredith. It was totally appropriate last time, and now it's really appropriate.
Yes, it is. And we will talk to you again here in the near future. We don't know when, but we promise you we will be back. For Rob Misch, I'm Ryan Green. It's been real. Take care.